Welcome to the Backasswords podcast. We are the Backasswords boys. My name is Kyle. I use he, they pronouns. And joining me from our beautiful Colorado studio is Arden.
And I use he, him pronouns.
Tonight, guys, gals, and NB pals, Arden is going to be continuing our multi-part series on Casey Anthony and the untimely death of her daughter, Kaylee Anthony.
And as you folks know from part one, this is a very heavy series. This is something that we are putting into our lollipop series. And so please, please, please remember to take care of yourselves and get yourself something sweet to munch on afterwards, because you will have definitely earned it at the end of this episode in particular, I will say.
Yeah, and funny little behind the scenes note, me and Arden literally accidentally bought the same sweet little lollipop treat.
Yes.
Didn't talk good to each other about it. Different flavors, but nope. We got the same treat. So
yes, we both got Nerds gummy clusters for after the episode. So that is an example of a physical lollipop that you could have.
Probably a little bit during, if we're being super honest with ourselves.
Yeah, for real. Bust into it anytime you need, folks.
But you guys, tonight is going to get into some topics that might be sensitive for some of our listeners. Talking about the death of Kaylee Anthony and the trial of Casey Anthony means talking about child neglect, child abuse, child sexual abuse, death, and specifically the death of a 2.5-year-old child. We will also be discussing an attempted suicide during tonight's episode. We will also be playing more audio clips and another 911 call tonight. We care about our audience, and we want to make sure that you folks are as safe as possible while listening. So if tonight's episode doesn't work for you, we'll see you next week.
And this is your reminder to always take care of yourselves when consuming media. If you don't know what you're getting into, you might not know how you feel coming out the end of an hour-long podcast. So take care of yourselves, and we'll see you next week or in our next series, whenever we see you. Before we continue the heartbreaking story of the death of Kaylee Anthony, I would just like to list my sources for tonight's episode. And of course, every time you listen to this podcast, first stop on the research train is our good friend, Wikipedia. And I used Wikipedia's pages on the death of Kaylee Anthony and Jose Baez, parentheses lawyer. I also went to crimemuseum.org and read their article on the Casey Anthony trial. I also went to WTSP.com. for an article entitled Report Anthony Baez Has a Sexual Relationship. CNN.com, I also went to them and read an article entitled Scientist, Body in Casey Anthony's Trunk, Only Plausible Explanation. I also went to abcnews.go.com for an article entitled George Anthony Left 5-Page Suicide Note, Sent Suicidal Text to Family. And I also pulled from 3 different videos tonight for audio clips that we're going to listen to. The first one is someone that we listed in our last sources for Casey Anthony Part 1. I watched There's Something About Casey from JCS Criminal Psychology on YouTube. I also pulled a clip from WESH2 News and their YouTube page, entitled Anthony Defense Presents Opening Statement. And I also pulled a video from a user called Rose Speaks. And this is the 911 call discovering Kaylee's body. A lot of spoilers in the sources tonight, folks. I apologize for that.
Oh, wow.
But all I guess if the content warning wasn't enough, now you truly know what you're getting into.
Oh boy. But you guys, we are not scholars, and we are probably going to get some things wrong.
Absolutely. I am not a journalist by any sense of the imagination, please.
No. And we are also not linguists. We are probably going to say some things wrong. And I'm going to put another big old allegedly on top of this episode, yes. I think, is definitely... fair.
Yes, I do think that it is fair to put an allegedly across all this. Again, if you know this case, you know why we're putting an allegedly across all of this. But very much like last week's episode, the dynamic hasn't really changed that much, folks, in terms of our feelings towards this.
No, despite my stances last week, my feelings have not changed.
Absolutely.
Now, hold on to your asses, because things are about to get backwards. Take us in, Harden.
When we had left off last week, we had discussed some of Casey Anthony's upbringing, her history of lying, and the disappearance of her 2.5-year-old daughter, Kaylee Anthony. We discussed in the last episode the shocking extent that Casey Anthony would go to get people to believe her lies, including completely making up people that she was keeping regular, quote-unquote, regular correspondence with, like her nanny, Zenaida Fernandez-Gonzalez, who, once again, she said nannied Kaylee Anthony for the better part of 2 years, up until the point that she went missing. Tonight, we are going to be continuing this frustrating and heartbreaking story. So, following her arrest at Universal Studios, Casey Anthony was charged with giving false statements to law enforcement. She was also charged with child neglect and obstruction of a criminal investigation, which, you nailed it, Kyle. She got dinged for that.
They did get her for child neglect, too, though.
They did get her for child neglect and obstructing justice, basically. The judge denied bail, saying that Casey had shown a woeful disregard for the welfare of her child, which, up until this point, may I remind you, pretty much everything that we know at this point is that Casey waited 31 days. She didn't even, quote-unquote, wait 31 days to report her daughter missing.
Didn't report her daughter missing.
No, her mother, Cindy Anthony, got a letter from an impound yard for her car being impounded. They went and picked it up, smelled like there was a dead body in there. She drives to Tony Lazaro's house, who is Casey's boyfriend, picks her up, brings her back to the Anthony household, and is like, where's Kaylee? Casey then tells Cindy, oh, she's been missing. Zenaida kidnapped her. And then Cindy calls the police and reports Kaylee missing. Please do not forget that that is what has happened up until this point. Oh my God. Oh my actual God. A woeful disregard for the welfare of her child. Yeah, I would say.
I think that's fair.
On July 22nd, 2008, after a bond hearing, the judge set bail at $500,000. Half a mil.
That's basically fuck you, stay in prison.
Correct.
You're waiting for trial.
However, a month later, Casey was released from the Orange County jail after her $500,000 bail was posted by Tony Padilla, who was the nephew of California bail bondsman Leonard Padilla. Leonard was kind of famous. I think he had something of a TV career, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh.
And Leonard said that he hoped that he and his nephew, Tony, could help Casey find her missing daughter. That was their reasoning for posting her bail, was they were like, we want to help. However, because of how public this case was and the sunshine laws in the state of Florida, angry crowds began to gather around the Anthony residence. This is Cindy and George's home, right? People were very vocal about their feelings in this case. And this is where Casey stayed while she was on bond. And because of the negative attention that this was getting, Tony and Leonard Padilla decided to revoke her bond and return her to jail.
That?
Yes. They decided.
Can I get a refund, please?
Yeah, for real. Leonard further added that Casey had not wanted to communicate with him.
Also, like, sorry, if they actually wanted to help find Kaylee Anthony, instead of spending $500,000 on her bond, why not spend $500,000 on, you know, detectives and search and rescue and volunteers and things to like actually help find her.
This, Kyle, is an excellent question. And I'm really, really glad that you brought this up, because to me, because this is most of the writing that I could find on this little blurb of the history here in terms of like her getting out of jail for a little bit and whatnot. I feel like this is just a huge publicity stunt for the Padilla family for some reason.
Oh, yeah.
And it's basically like just like an ad.
I feel like that's bad publicity, no?
It's despicable.
I mean, I guess no publicity is bad.
Yeah. And mind you, although feelings towards Casey Anthony had definitely shifted at this point, there were obviously still some people who were on Casey's side, who were saying, like, oh, yeah, I could understand maybe this and this and this and whatever. There are people in her life who are defending her.
And even there are people that are still on her side.
Yes, there are, like, very vehemently so, as a matter of fact. And yeah, so that was still true at this time as well. But this is what's... I don't know if you know this, Kyle. I don't know if you remember this from your research into this. Casey was later arrested again for completely different charges. This time, it was financial fraud charges after stealing a friend's checkbook and using it to buy multiple items at multiple stores under not her name. Not Casey. That's not Casey's checkbook. What makes this
Jesus.
Even... And what makes this even more crazy, Kyle, is that security footage pulled from this time frame, which again is after Kaylee's disappearance, is when she steals this checkbook, right? Showed that Kaylee was never with Casey during any of this security footage while she's running around with this checkbook. And furthermore, investigators who analyzed the security footage noted that Casey, on all of these shopping trips, was never buying items that would be bought by a mother of a child. No diapers, no baby food, no baby toys, no nothing. In fact, one of the clips that I saw anecdotally in my research shows her buying shit for a party, like snacks and a 24 case of beer. Shit like that, Kyle.
Arden, she's literally an event planner. Of course she has to buy things like snacks and beer and things of that nature.
Yeah. For her job at Universal Studios as an event planner. Right. Dude.
You know how in JFK you were saying every paragraph I just kept melting your brain a little bit more?
Yeah.
I feel like for this series, every paragraph, you're just making my blood pressure raise a little bit. Just a couple of points every paragraph. Oh my God.
This is something that I kind of alluded to just while we're stopped here, Kyle. This is something that I alluded to in part one. I genuinely, for the life of me, I do not understand Casey Anthony's thought process during this entire thing. I do not get it at all. Whatever coping mechanism you tell me that you're fucking dealing with this with, I failed to see the point A to point B. And I don't even think that that's the answer. And that's just me. But like, I do not get it.
No. Like, especially, you know, seeing how borderline obsessed with Kaylee, Casey's mom was.
Cindy, yeah.
Cindy would have absolutely stepped up and raised Kaylee.
Absolutely. Yes. I'm going to talk about that a lot during the backassword stance. I'm going to leave it right there for now, but I'm going to talk about that a lot when we get to the backassword stance.
Yeah.
So all of the security footage that me and Kyle were just talking about, this again was released to the public during the time of the investigation. And again, this only further fueled the hatred against Casey Anthony. this was a very public case. The Sunshine Laws allowed this to happen and all of that stuff. It essentially allows it to happen in real time, basically. This is where you kind of hear that this trial and case was the social media case of the time. Not only because word was spreading so quickly about the case via social media, but because Casey Anthony's social media profiles were a very big part of this case and this profile and this character profile they were building against Casey Anthony. Right?
Right.
This included pictures of Casey partying, participating in hot body contests, like we talked about last week, and things of that nature. Again, just to say this, because this is factually accurate, what I'm about to say, this is a little overplayed at the time, in 2008. Oh, yeah. Because most of the pictures of Casey that were released at the time in 2008 were pictures that were taken over the course of approximately 3 years of time. Not all of these pictures of Casey partying and drinking and blah, 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 whatever, came from after Kaylee went missing. And one could say that it's even easy to see that because, like, Casey's physical appearance and her hair length and even her hair color is changing throughout most of these photos. So, like,
yeah. And, like, to be clear, there is nothing wrong with a mother going out and partying and doing hot body contests and whatever the fuck she wants.
Nope.
But if you're doing that actively while your daughter is missing and you haven't told the police?
Correct.
Because, yes, some of those pictures were before. Most of those pictures were before.
Correct.
But not all of them.
Not
if,
all
if
of
I
them.
If I am to be... Ma- to
no.
Be, yeah, correct
You're
me
right.
if I'm wrong here. Yeah.
You're right.
And that's where I draw the line.
This is there's the rub, dude. Like, that's really where it happens. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
to drop a Hamlet quote on you guys real quick. Okay, so that's all that we're going to say in that regard. Okay, so just know that that's factually accurate, everything that we just said. Okay? Oh, so... Trigger warning, we're talking about the body now. We're talking about the discovery of the body, okay? On August 11th, 12th, and 13th in 2008, meter reader for Orange County, Roy Kronk, called the police about a suspicious object found in a forested area near the residential area that the Anthonys lived in. It was about less than a mile away. In the first instance, his first call on August 11th, he was directed by the sheriff's office to call a tip line, which he did, receiving no return call. Okay.
Okay.
In the second instance, Roy Kronk again called the sheriff's office and eventually was met by two police officers. He reported to them that he had seen what appeared to be a skull near a gray bag. On that occasion, the officer conducted a short search and stated that he did not see anything. There's no skull, there's no bag, there's no body, there's no nothing.
I firmly believe that cop just pulled up, didn't get out of the car, just looked left and right. It's like, no, I don't see nothing, and drove off.
Yeah, and here's the thing, and I'm not one to usually do this, but I do feel like maybe this is just an aspect that's important to be understood here.
Right.
Is that there is this element of, because of how big the Casey Anthony case is, there's an element of, like, there's probably a bunch of tips that are coming in about Kaylee that are just complete and utter horse shit.
You always get fake tips with these really big, especially media frenzied cases, you know.
So, I mean, Kaylee's face was on the cover of People magazine, you know what I mean? 45 million readers saw her, you know what I mean? lot of attention.
Which, how shitty is that? That, like, every single big case, they just get, like... I mean, obviously, some people think they see something, and it's wrong. Yeah. But then there's also those people that just straight up call in, like, false tips.
Yeah.
On, like, a missing child case.
Yeah. And that's like a... That's like a 101 series on its own, for real.
For
like,
real. That's honestly. Psychopaths 101.
And then on August 13th, nothing came of that call. But this is what's fucking crazy to me, Kyle. Almost two in, like, wait, August to September, October, November, December. There's like 4 months that go by.
Yeah.
In this time period. And Roy Kronk, at the same fucking stretch of road, calls again. Except this time, he, like, goes down to the wooded area, he sees the skull, and then he calls his supervisor.
So he confirms, he's like, I'm going to make sure it's not a fucking styrofoam cup that got crushed in a weird way or something. I'm going to make sure it's this. And then he calls his supervisor.
He calls his supervisor. And again, I feel like something that's important to remember here is that Roy Kronk is a meter reader for Orange County. So he's driving around Orange County, probably similar, if not the same routes all the time, to do these like checks and preventative maintenance on water meters, natural gas meters, stuff like that, right?
Probably a pretty chill job.
Probably a pretty chill job. And the thing about it is that I would imagine this, especially with how much time passed, I would imagine this is something that he like sees. He sees it every single fucking time he drives past that stretch of road, and it just fucking bothers him. You know what I mean? Until he can't fucking take it anymore. And on December 11th, like you mentioned, he goes down there and he's like, I'm going to make sure. And then he calls his supervisor, who then places a call to the sheriff's office. And there is a 911 call that we are going to play for you folks of this. And so just know that this 911 call doesn't have the same emotional weight or intensity as the one that we played you in part one had with Cindy Anthony's 911 call. But the subject matter of this is still disturbing, so please, please, please be advised as you're listening to this. If you don't want to listen to this 911 call, it's about 2 minutes long. Skip the next 2 minutes. Here's your 3-second warning right now.
Yes, this is Orange County Utilities Emergency Dispatch. We found a human skull.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. We got a, is it a meter reader?
Yes.
I'm going to let you speak right now with the representative from our field services facilities. Hi. I'm going to, everything is recorded. Here he is.
How are you doing? Skull of a, if you believe it's human.
What's the location, please?
It's right off of Suburban and Chickasaw in the Kelly Anthony area, right by the
school. Oh. Do you have a specific address for me or not?
No, it's right by the school. If you take
is
it,
he's you are.
Yeah, he's in.
Suburban and Goldenwood?
Well, Suburban and Chickasaw.
Chickasaw, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and the school is right there. I can't think of the name of the school. It just go right straight down. It dead ends right into the woods.
Okay.
It'll be on the east side of Chickasaw, Suburban.
East side of Chickasaw. And what is your party's name that we're going to meet with? He's not touching this, I hope.
No,
he's a
meter reader.
Meter reader?
Yeah, and I'll just tell him to stay at that location and just stay away from everything.
Okay. And if you can, try to stress to him to please not draw attention to the area.
Okay.
And that would be great, just in case it is something, it may be nothing, but just in case.
Yes.
And you're from what department?
Utilities Customer Service.
Utilities.
And if you need any information, my phone number is...
Go ahead and send a call up for a deputy to meet with him.
Okay.
And we'll see you there very shortly. What type of vehicle is he going to be in?
Probably a Colorado. Small Colorado, white. Orange County. It'll have Orange County insignia on it.
Okay. White, Colorado,
yeah, Chevy
truck.
Colorado. Yes.
And with Orange County markings.
Yes.
Orange County markings. Okay, we'll see you there very shortly, okay?
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
So, Kyle. We just listened to that 911 call, and I do want to ask and check in with you. How are you feeling? What do you make of that? Where are you at right now?
I mean, I have to say a shout out to Roy Kronk for like not letting it go, you know?
Yeah.
I love that the operator is immediately like, oh, I hope he's not touching it.
Yeah, for real.
Like, please, for the love of God, make sure he's not touching it. 4 months later is crazy. And it's Casey has been waiting trial this whole time?
Kind of in and out of jail, awaiting trial. We're going to dictate kind of Casey's actions in the next section of my outline, but I wanted to give this section of the outline the attention that it deserves and tell it as one concise story. Then we're going to get to Casey after this.
Okay.
But unfortunately, as a result of this 911 call, police were dispatched to the area, and they searched the area that Roy Kronk told them to search, and they found the remains of a child, specifically, in a trash bag. This next thing that I'm about to say is, to me, particularly one of the more disturbing aspects of this case. Investigative teams searching the area recovered duct tape, which was hanging from hair that was still attached to the skull, and duct tape was also recovered from some tissue that had not completely decomposed from the skull. Most of the remains were pretty much bone. Over the next 4 days, they continued to search the area, and more bones were found in the wooded area near the spot where the remains had initially been discovered. And not to make this too morbid here, but this is something that we have mentioned on the show before, and this is a contributing factor to the investigation and eventually the trial of Kaylee Anthony, so we are going to mention this here. The trial of the death of Kaylee Anthony, I should say. The fact that Florida has such a humid, tropical, and hot climate, we mentioned this in our Jonestown series, and to put it as delicately and respectfully as possible, this is the most apt conditions for decomposition of a human body, unfortunately. And this prevents us from determining exactly what happened to Kaylee Anthony.
Yeah, combine that with obviously some scattering of her remains, which unless whoever did kill Kaylee went full psychopath mode, which could maybe be a possibility, there will be a much bigger crime scene for something like that, you know?
Yes.
Implies that, you know, there was also some wildlife at play here, which also is another factor that makes it a lot harder to determine a specific cause or time of death.
But on that note, Kyle, on December 19th, 2008, so 8 days after the body was initially found and recovered, medical examiner Jan Garavaglia confirmed that the remains found in this wooded area were Kaylee Anthony's remains. The death at this point was also ruled a homicide by Miss Garavaglia. But the cause of death was listed as undetermined, very much because of what me and Kyle are saying. The discovery of Kaylee's remains was approximately 5 to 6 months after her disappearance.
Jeez.
So, it is... I know that we're going to talk about it later, but oh my God, Kyle, the fucking duct tape, it fucks with me so much, dude. I hate that aspect of this.
Yeah.
Something interesting to note here at this point in the story is that Roy Kronk later testified during the Kaylee Anthony murder trial and said that he had seen a white object in the same location over and over that he was, quote, 99.99% sure was a human skull in August of 2008, which again makes this case more frustrating because he was so sure of it in August, but the police didn't discover it or really listen to him until December when his supervisor made that 911 call. That was 4 months before Kaylee's remains were found. 4 months that they could have found it and listened to Roy Kronk, but they fucking did not. And I'm gonna let you guys know that we're about to hear some pretty frustrating things from the law enforcement side of this. So after calling the police the next day and meeting the deputy at the scene back in August 12th, if you folks remember that we just said, Roy Kronk testified, quote,
"The officer looked one way and then the other. Then he berated me for half an hour for wasting his time. I called it. You nailed it, dude.
You nailed it, Kyle. You nailed it. The cop acted exactly the way.
Piggies get a pig, dude. Yeah. I fucking knew it.
Oh, God. I know, dude. I just... It's so frustrating. That's the level that this cop went to. Like, his time was so inconvenienced when she was literally right there. The girl that they were looking for was right there. I know that hindsight is 2020. I know that I said what I said earlier, but like, oh my God, it's so frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
When Kronk was in the same area in December of 2008, he stumbled again on Kaylee's remains, recalling on the stand, quote,
"I did not know what it was. I never lifted it off the ground. That was a very horrific thing for me to find, obviously."
However, and this is just something that's there, his testimony did differ from previous dispositions that he had made, where he claimed that the skull had fallen out of a bag that he did lift about 4 feet off the ground. So this is unclear. This is unclear. This is the best I could find, folks. All right?
Right.
Moving away.
At the worst, a little bit of evidence tampering, but like it doesn't change much there, you know?
Yeah. If you folks are expecting me to go on like a Roy Kronk tangent about how he actually had a hand in Kaylee's murder, it's not there. It's
no.
Nothing close. But now moving away from the discovery of Kaylee's remains at the time, we are going to shift gears and talk about Casey again. And particularly while Casey was in jail. And this is where a lot more of our video clips are going to come out. And I need to stop prefacing with saying this, but like, this is going to piss you off, guys. Like, just be prepared.
Gonna. I'm already there.
So while in jail, Casey Anthony was repeatedly visited by her mother and father, Cindy and George Anthony, and had regular correspondence with them. Again, going back to what we said in last week's episode, Cindy was, for some reason, vehemently on Casey Anthony's side during this section of the process. This could be potentially due to the immense care slash borderline obsession that she had with her granddaughter. But what's interesting about this point in the story is that she's still demonstrating this immense level of support for Casey in spite of all of the lies and everything that was being uncovered in the investigation.
Well, that's what's so interesting to me is from the get-go, in that first 911 call, she seemed suspicious of Casey.
Yes.
You know?
Mm-hmm. And she also has mentioned in television interviews up to this point that she doesn't think that Casey is telling them the entire truth.
Yeah.
And obviously Casey was found to be a liar during the entire investigation up until she got arrested at Universal, right? And so why does she still show this care and love and support for her daughter, especially when she's face to face with her daughter? That's something that's also interesting about this. And we're going to see that here really soon, actually. But despite all of this, Kyle and the folks at home, Cindy continued to advocate for her daughter, Casey. And once again, unfortunately, Casey Anthony continued to demonstrate a very nonchalant attitude towards her daughter being missing in particular.
Mm-hmm.
And potentially killed and homicided, right?
Right.
We're going to play for you right now a clip from one of the visits that Cindy and George paid to Casey while she was in jail. In this clip, you're going to hear George hand the phone over to Cindy to talk to Casey. The clip that we're about to play took place on August 14th, one day after Roy Kronk's third call to the police, right? We're going to play two clips back to back in this section between Casey and her parents. The first is between Casey and Cindy, where they're essentially checking in on each other. And Cindy also reveals what the media is uncovering in relation to Kaylee's disappearance and now alleged death. The second section of the clip will be between Casey and her father, George, where they are discussing the priorities of Casey's lawyer, the Anthony family, and how the public is reacting to the case. Okay?
Okay.
I'm trying to describe it, but really, you just got to listen to it.
All right.
All right. Hi, sweetie. Hi, Mom. Oh. Well, I lasted a minute. How are you feeling? Not. We're not doing well, Kate. None of us. Lee's been sick. Dad's blown up at the media.
Yeah, I heard.
Well, someone just said that Kaylee was dead this morning, that she drowned in the pool. That's the newest story out there.
Surprise, surprise.
So, it's very hard.
Well, yeah, I... Trust me, I know that. Someone just sent me some of the stuff that's been online. Comments that people have been leaving off of certain articles, I guess, that have been written, and it was very upsetting last night to see that.
Oh, yes, but, you know, it's terrible, Casey. Get hate mail, threatening letters.
Well, I haven't gotten anything messages like that, thankfully. All of the letters that I've gotten have been positive. Even the letter that she had attached was still very positive. Everyone's certain that she's okay. Offering help. A couple people have said that they've called and talked to Dad or have left him messages. So
we need to have something to go on.
Mom, I don't have anything. I'm sorry. I've been here a month. I've been here a month today. Do you understand how I feel? I mean, do you really understand how I feel in this? I'm completely, completely out of the loop with everything. The only information I get is when I see my attorney. That's it.
Yeah,
outside of that, I have nothing to go on. Every day I have to sit here and wait and wonder. I wonder if something's going on. I'm wondering if there's something new.
It's you know, it has to be you two, you know, you and your daughter. It's got to be the ones that's got to be focused on here.
Well, he's focusing on Kaylee and I. You guys are focusing on Kaylee. I know I'm still part of your focus, but she's your main focus, and I understand that. Dad, I know where everybody's priorities lie. I knew that the day that I got here.
Well, you know, just I bring up. Then again, I want to bring up this thing about you know, you being the boss. You're the one that can control everything. You're the one.
No,
that
I, the Dad. Decision. Please.
Sweetie.
Okay, sweetie. Completely...
I'm not trying to get you upset. I'm trying to
No,
talk
but
to you.
I am upset now. I'm Please. Completely upset. One, the media's going to have a freaking field day with this.
No,
I wasn't
not.
Even...
Not.
I wasn't
Listen.
Even supposed to take this. Listen, let me speak for a second. Dad, I let everybody talk.
Okay.
They're not releasing it. Well, I hope not. I'll keep saying whatever I have to about the police, they don't let it go. Can someone let me... Come on!
Casey, hold on, sweetheart. Settle down, baby.
Nobody's letting me speak. You want me to talk? Then...
All right,
give me
I'll listen
3 seconds to see
go,
something.
Sweetheart.
I'm not in control over any of this because I don't know what the hell's going on. I don't know what's going on. My entire life has been taken from me. Everything has been taken from me. You don't understand. Everybody wants me to have answers. I don't have any answers because I don't know what's going on. I have no one to talk to except Jose when he comes. It's the only person that I can talk to right now because I can't even say anything to you guys besides telling you that I love you. I want Kaylee. Things like that. And that's not even getting put on the air, which it should be. It's everything else. Everything that I'm not saying.
I'm coming at you with a raw reaction, okay? We're not going to take a moment before the audience hears it to discuss this a little bit. How are you feeling right now, Kyle?
Putting myself in her shoes, right?
Yeah.
My daughter is missing. I'm falsely accused.
Right.
Or at least falsely suspicious-sized. Suspected. Yeah. Jesus.
thrown into jail on a quote-unquote whim.
On a whim, right. But my daughter is still out there missing.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be getting mad at my parents for not giving me enough attention.
I don't think so. No.
You know?
Yeah, I do.
Again, not fully fair to judge people off of their reactions to things because everyone reacts differently to things, but that is very self-centered.
Yeah.
When your 2.5-year-old daughter has been kidnapped and is now missing
allegedly
for 2-3 months.
At this point, yeah.
Yeah.
And the thing that I also find additionally frustrating about specifically the first section of the clip that we watched is that, again, putting myself in Casey Anthony's shoes here, this is allegedly the first time that I am hearing that there is a potential that my daughter is dead. Because Cindy mentions that there's a news story that Kaylee drowned in the swimming pool, right? Somebody's
right.
Alleging that. And Casey's response to this is a very flat, monotone, surprise, surprise, is what
yeah.
she says. And again, if I'm trying to put myself in this mother's shoes who claims that she was tirelessly looking for her child, if this is the first time that I'm hearing that my daughter is dead, I probably would have a different emotional reaction. Now, again, I appreciate that throughout this entire series, Kyle, you've reminded myself and the audience that we cannot judge people based off of their initial reactions to things, because that is very, very fair. However, very much like we mentioned at the beginning of this episode, when you pair it with the circumstance, it's just shocking to me. It just,
yeah.
It feels off. Point off center.
Yeah, combine it with again the to point to her being, in our non-professional opinions, a total narcissist. The fact that every single time her parents bring up Kaylee, she immediately, within like a sentence or two, deflects it back to how hard this is on her.
Correct.
And what she's going through, and nothing. She never asks for updates on Kaylee, on what's going on.
Nope.
No, she just wants to talk about, you know, in the first call, her boyfriend, and now she wants to talk about her fucking lawyer and her like how hard this is on her, and it's just ridiculous.
And to pair something with what you just said, Kyle, something that I also have noticed, and maybe you're picking up on this with me, and I'm sure that the audience back at home is also picking up on this, is that I feel like the only times, and again, like I haven't looked at every single fucking piece of footage from this case, right? So please take what I'm about to say with a grain of salt. But I feel like what I've noticed in my research and even in the clips that we have shown on the podcast is that the only time that we see and our audience hears Casey Anthony get audibly upset or like physically, emotionally frustrated is when she is, when something is not going her way, when people aren't listening to her, when people don't care about her.
Yeah, she literally throws like a little tantrum when her parents keep talking over her in that clip. Like,
and to be quite honest with you, so the moment that you hear Casey get frustrated in the last section of the clip that we just played, George, her father, is handing the phone over to Cindy, Casey's mother, and that's why she feels like, oh, nobody's listening to me because dad is handing over the phone or whatever. And honestly, Kyle, and again, you might disagree with me on this, you might agree with me on this, I feel like George and Cindy just care about, they care about both Kaylee and Casey.
Yeah.
Her mom is literally grabbing the phone from her dad because she wants to talk to her daughter, is the impression that I get from that moment. And Casey throws this little fucking tantrum about it.
And the tantrum is about how no one's giving her attention and listening to her and letting her talk. And it's exactly, like, your mom is literally trying to do that right now.
Also, again, what a ridiculous thing for Casey Anthony to say, because the police listened to you for an entire fucking day and you led them on a wild goose chase.
Yeah.
And lied to them and then admitted lying to them. Like, oh my God, the fucking... She makes me so mad. Oh. And folks, as difficult as this next section of the story is going to be to talk about, I do think that this part of the story is important to tell, and this involves Casey Anthony's father, George Anthony, again. On January 23rd, 2009, between the time of Casey's arrest and her trial, which took place in 2011, by the way, George Anthony, her father, attempted to take his own life at a Florida hotel after sending disturbing texts to his family claiming that he no longer wanted to live. When George was discovered at this hotel, they also noted that he left behind a 5-page suicide note. This was reported via a 911 call from the Anthony's family lawyer, Brad Conway. Conway reported that George had taken several bottles of medication from the house, as well as some pictures from the house to go to this hotel with him. One of the pictures that he took with him was of his granddaughter, Kaylee. And at this point in the story, everybody, including George, knew that Kaylee was dead because her remains were found on December 11th and the homicide determination occurred on December 18th of 2008, right? When investigators reviewed the suicide note initially, they would not comment to the media on the contents of the letter, and we're not going to do that either. However, investigators did make a point to note that there was no sort of admission of being involved with Kaylee's death or anything like that. And it raised zero speculation that George was involved in his granddaughter's death slash homicide. The investigators made a point to note how much George had been through leading in the previous 6 months leading up to his suicide attempt, and noted that he was very low and very melancholy when speaking to investigators after being held in a psychiatric hospital for 72 hours after this attempt. George was not arrested at any point during this. And the reason, again, folks, that I feel like it is important to mention this is, one, for something that we're going to talk about later in the episode, but also, two, like, I feel like this really just hits home once again how heavy of a toll this is taking on George and Cindy in particular, but the entire Anthony family minus Casey, if I'm being honest with you. George was going through a lot at this point. Yeah. And unfortunately for us and the story that we're telling, his suffering does not end at this point in the series. In fact, it gets way fucking worse, which we're going to talk about here in a couple of pages. But I did want to mention this because I think it helps us deal with the gravity of the situation. And again, demonstrates George's headspace during this entire thing.
Mm-hmm.
So before we get into the murder trial for the murder of Kaylee Anthony, something that I think is really, really, also really important to mention here is Casey's lawyer, Jose Baez. Okay? This guy is a fucking trip in of himself. Okay? I just want you all to know how fuck, dude, Jose Baez is such an important part to this story. I cannot even fucking describe to you.
Yeah.
But allow me to attempt to describe it to you. Jose Angel Baez, who was born on September 17th, 1970, is an American criminal defense lawyer and author, by the way. Because of course he fucking is, Kyle. Because of course he is. He is known, Jose Baez is known, for representing high-profile defendants such as Casey Anthony, Aaron fucking Hernandez, Mark Nordlicht, and Harvey motherfucking Weinstein, dude. This guy has done the absolute circuit of pieces of shit that you could
defend. Yeah. Holy shit.
Oh my.
He's like a cartoon character scumbag lawyer.
That's crazy. I hate to make this joke, but you know how the Mickey, if the fucking Disney will make like little parodies of like stories or whatever, and they'll like put the Mickey characters in the different roles and shit like that, like the Christmas ones. You want to know who would play Jose Baez if they did a recreation of this? Pete the fucking cat, Goofy's fucking neighbor, dude, who is just a fucking fat piece of shit asshole, dude.
Yeah, dude.
That would be who plays him. God. Smoking on his fucking cigar and shit. God. After being granted his legal license, Jose Baez focused primarily on criminal defense cases, including the case of Elvira Garcia, who was an undocumented Mexican immigrant accused of kidnapping a child that she had adopted as her own. As a result of Jose's defense, Garcia's charges were dropped, as it turned out to be more of a civil custody matter. This was like his entrance into the legal practice. He also tried the first-degree murder case of Nelton Diaz, heavily covered by the media in Orlando and Puerto Rico, because the victim was the 2-year-old granddaughter of world boxing champion Wilfredo Vasquez. Okay, so he's doing like these really high profile, really disturbing cases. There, I just mentioned there's another 2-year-old dead person in this case as well, right? I hate to fucking say it this way, but my man has some fucking experience in this regard.
Yeah.
During that trial, Baez's client was acquitted of first and second degree murder, but was convicted of manslaughter and child abuse. But it is this moment in his career, the Casey Anthony case, that really, really propelled him to the spotlight. This was his first biggie, you could say. before Weinstein, before Hernandez, right?
Right.
The legal proceedings for Casey Anthony for the murder and misleading law enforcement finally began with jury selection. Okay?
So she was being charged with the murder.
She was being charged with the murder.
Okay.
And her trial was going to take place in 2011, as I mentioned earlier, right? Due to the massive publicity associated with this case, this process, the jury selection process, took place in Clearwater, Florida, rather than Orlando, which is where the crime took place, in the hopes of finding a jury pool untainted by the media attention that the case was receiving.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck. It's just like moving Ted Bundy from fucking Boulder to Colorado Springs. It's like, what are you doing? That pool of jurors began shrinking as the judge allowed many of them to go home for financial and family reasons, because this was going to be a 6-week long trial. Little did they know. The jury could have been sequestered for months, preventing jurors from working or taking care of family. Potential jurors' answers to several questions would narrow the pool even further. For instance, any preconceived ideas about the case based on media attention may influence the decision, as many of them strongly held views on the death penalty, right? And they did pursue the death penalty with Casey Anthony, just so that we're all on the same page.
I was about to ask, so Florida was a death penalty state at this time.
It was still a death penalty. I believe that it still is. And they were pursuing the death penalty. The prosecution was like, yeah, we would like the death penalty for Casey Anthony. Which, fuck. Like, holy shit.
Damn.
At this step in a prolonged and controversial case, the selection of the jury is a historical moment. But it is not the only aspect of the trial that made history in the field of criminal investigation. This is crazy, Kyle. The judge ruled that evidence regarding decomposition should be admissible. And this was the first time that evidence of this nature would ever appear in a Florida court.
Okay.
This was a case in which the manner of decomposition of the body was important to determining whether someone was guilty or not guilty beyond a reasonable doubt.
I mean,
hey, they nailed it with that one.
Yeah.
And folks,
no comment. No.
Yeah.
No notes.
No comment. No notes. And folks, once again, I find myself saying that I cannot stress to you enough what I'm about to say here. The beginning of this trial was an absolute motherfucking bombshell. Like a clusterfuck cacophony of what the actual hell is happening here. That's what the beginning of this trial was like for everybody who was watching it. And may I say, everybody was watching this. Not that this trial needed an extra boost to make it more crazy or confusing or heartbreaking, but this is kind of where things get off the rails, Kyle, if I'm being honest with you.
And I feel like a good, not all of it for sure, but a good chunk of it is because of how much of a media frenzy this case was.
I think that that definitely plays a factor.
The and fact I think that it played... I, a 13, 14-year-old kid in fucking Utah, was actively paying attention to this case at the time, you know?
Yep. This was one of those, everybody's talking about it. It's the flying disc craze all over again, except it's Casey Anthony, right? This is all anybody was talking about for years, honestly. Yeah.
Honestly.
From 2008 to 2011. Casey Anthony's trial began the week of May 23rd in 2011 with opening statements from both the prosecution and the defense. The prosecution stated, as expected, that only Casey Anthony could have killed her daughter, Kaylee. But the defense, and can I say very clearly, the defense had another theory. Casey's attorney, Jose Baez, told the jury that Kaylee's death was an accidental drowning, and that the reason for the month-long delay before her disappearance was reported resulted from Casey and her father, George Anthony's, panic upon finding the body.
Surprise,
exactly. Putting George directly in the situation with Casey, right? They both discovered the body.
What the fuck, Casey?
Uh-huh. Casey's behavior afterwards, which included, once again, lying to her friends and family about her daughter's whereabouts, as well as partying at local clubs, resulted from a lifelong habit of hiding her pain, according to her lawyer, a coping mechanism. And they alleged, okay? They alleged that this habit of lying was formed in her childhood because her father sexually abused her from the time that she was 8 years old. George sexually molested and inappropriately touched and sexually assaulted from the time she was 8, Casey Anthony. This is what the defense alleged. This was the first time that this allegation had ever been brought up. Okay? We're going to play you two clips right now from Jose Baez's opening statement from this trial. These two clips, we're going to play them back to back. The first clip comes from WESH2 News, and it's very much like a news clip. And the second clip we're going to play comes from the JCS video that I mentioned in my sources. The first clip is very much from a news station, like I said, so please forgive me for that kind of break in the storytelling vibe that we got going on here. But we are going to play these back to back and then discuss them afterwards, okay? These clips do have some disturbing content that they're going to talk about. They're going to talk about alleged sexual abuse of a child and stuff like that. If you don't want to listen to this stuff, I anticipate that these clips will take up about 3 minutes of the next 3 minutes of the show. So if you don't want to listen to these, here's your 3 second warning.
She never was missing. Kaylee Anthony died on June 16, 2008, when she drowned in her family's swimming pool.
Defense attorney Jose Baez stunned the audience when, for the first time in 3 years, he alleged Kaylee Anthony died as a result of accidental drowning, not murder. Then came another stunner. When Kaylee went missing the morning of June 16, 2008, he says George and Casey split up to try to find her. As Casey went to the front of the family home, Baez says George Anthony discovered Kaylee's lifeless body in the back, in the family pool, then blamed Casey.
And shortly thereafter, George began to yell at her. Look what you've done! Your mother will never forgive you, and you will go to jail for child neglect for the rest of your frickin' life. On behalf of the defense, I want to thank you for the sacrifice that you've made in your jury service and coming here and helping us see justice. We know it's no easy task, and we intend, I'm sure both sides, on getting you home as quickly as possible once you have all of the information that you need. Everyone wants to know what happened. How in the world can a mother wait 30 days before ever reporting her child missing? It's insane. It's bizarre. Something's just not right about that. Well, the answer is actually relatively simple. She never was missing. Kaylee Anthony died on June 16, 2008, when she drowned in her family's swimming pool. Well, the reason we're all here is because not of the commonality of this tragedy, but of the uniqueness of the family that it happened to. you will hear about ugly things, secret things, things that people don't speak about, things that Casey never spoke about. On June 16th, 2008, after Kaylee died, Casey did what she's been doing all her life, or for most of it, hiding her pain, going into that dark corner and pretending that she does not live in the situation that she's living in. This family must keep its secrets quiet. And it all began when Casey was 8 years old and her father came into her room and began to touch her inappropriately. This child, who at 8 years old, learned to lie immediately. She could be 13 years old, have her father's penis in her mouth, and then go to school and play with the other kids as if nothing ever happened. That will help you understand why no one knew that her child was dead.
Does it help you understand?
I want to punch a brick wall, dude. Holy shit.
Yeah. Oh. That's a lollipop moment right there. So, Kyle, I know that I've been hitting you with some shit this episode, and it's not easy. This is something that we talk about all the time with true crime. It's very hard to approach this subject matter, which is why we avoided doing it on the podcast for a little while and stuff like that. But I do want to check in with you, and I do want to ask you how you are feeling after watching those clips, and if you noticed anything. Did anything stand out to you from those clips?
I think my biggest thing is that she threw her dad under the bus like that. Full lies. I don't believe a word of it.
I don't believe it either. I'll just say that real quick.
And she kind of did it for nothing.
Yeah.
Because not only is that a blatant lie, the drowning aspect, let alone the sexual abuse, but even if she was sexually abused by her dad as a child, terrible.
Yes.
Not an excuse for the behavior. Like, even a little bit.
Yeah.
Even a teensy 1%. No.
Yes. And I think what's important here is that they are trying to use this as an excuse, as the excuse, even for Casey's behavior and her lying, her blatant lying.
Mm-hmm.
This explains why she lied about her high school graduation, about her pregnancy, about Kaylee being missing, and blah, 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 Zenaida Fernandez Gonzalez, whatever, right? Zanny the nanny. Like, all of these are fabrications because of this, right? This is something to be understood, right?
Right.
Is how they're presenting it. And I think something else that's important to note here, Kyle, and I don't know if you're picking up on this, but Jose Baez is a very, very persuasive speaker. He is, oh my God, I hate to use a pejorative again, but he has risen up that jury right now.
Yeah.
And he is, I mean, I got to give the man credit. He is very charismatic. He is very persuasive in his speaking. He is very...
He definitely did speech and debate in high school, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He's got the speaking style of like a Jim Jones almost. You know what I mean? Just very, very captivating. Very hangs on every word that he says. Stuff like that. Everything is very deliberate. Very intentional. Right?
Very Saul Goodman coded.
Yeah. And I mean, he's a lawyer, so I mean, I guess there's an aspect of that to it, but
yeah.
A particularly powerful speaker is what I want to notate here.
Mm-hmm.
And very persuasive. It's It's crazy because it, and again, just to speak to the gravity of the dynamic shift in this moment, everybody up until this point, that like that her drowning in the swimming pool was not the official story. This was, for a lot of people, the first time that they heard this potential explanation. And it's in the opening statement where he's like, she drowned. George and Casey looked for her. George found her body and then yelled at Casey and belittled her and shamed her, which is wild.
Absolutely wild.
Doesn't sound like the George Anthony that anybody had known up until this point, right?
Right.
What is additionally disturbing about this claim? Oh, God, I fucking hate talking about shit like this, Kyle. Because, okay, I'll say it later. But what is additionally disturbing about this, folks, is something that Kyle mentioned last week that I completely glossed over in my research, and I did find this in my research for today's outline. There were reports of Jose Baez and Casey Anthony having sexual interactions with one another as Jose was employed as Casey Anthony's lawyer. Okay?
Right.
I'm going to get to... I want to say it right now, but I can't. I can't yet. In a deposition that came out, the private investigator who was hired by her defense team, who was hired by Jose Baez, was named Dominic Casey, okay? And he says that Jose Baez and Casey Anthony were involved in a sexual relationship and claims that Jose Baez told him that, quote,
Casey had murdered Kaylee and dumped the body somewhere, and he needed all the help he could get to find the body before anyone else did.
Huge, first of all, huge allegedly on this, just real quick. But also, like, what a huge accusation to throw at Jose Baez at this.
Seriously.
Point. Like, he told me Casey murdered her and that we need to find the body before anybody else does. Like, what? What? No.
Big if true.
In the affidavit, Dominic says that Casey Anthony wanted to pin Kaylee's murder on her family or the meter reader who found the toddler's body, Mr. Roy Kronk. So Baez hired Dominic Casey in August of 2008, and Dominic says that a month later, he overheard Jose Baez tell Casey Anthony that she owed him oral sex in exchange for canceling a television interview, saying, quote,
I'm sorry, what?
Uh-huh. We're going to talk about it. Believe me, we're going to fucking, dude, I'm fucking making the fire. We're going to roast this motherfucker on the spit, okay? Just walk with me. I know.
He called the network saying they would have to take a rain check, hung up the phone.
And then Jose Baez proceeded to tell Anthony that she owed him oral sex, according to Dominic's testimony. Furthermore, me and Kyle have a lot to say, but we're holding it for the end of this section. Furthermore, according to Dominic, 2 weeks after this canceled press appearance, he found Casey Anthony coming out of Jose Baez's private office naked, allegedly. Dominic said of this in his deposition, quote,
Casey told me she had to do what Jose said because she had no money for her defense. I reminded her that Baez had more than enough money from the network he sold the photographs to pay for her defense. Casey apologized and assured me it would not happen again.
Now, folks, I told you this piece of the story a little bit out of order because this deposition that Dominic Casey came out with came out after the trial had already taken place. But the reason that I'm mentioning it here in our series is because, it, just like Kyle said, big if true. If this is true, then this drastically changes the dynamic between Jose Baez and Casey Anthony. And one could say that it's a very informative piece of this puzzle. Now, this is the part where me and Kyle get to talk about how we feel about this. And before I just start popping off, I'm actually going to give Kyle the microphone for a second here, because I've been talking a lot.
Like, if it's true and there's this crazy, you know, power dynamic that he's manipulating her, that's horrific.
That is horrific.
It just screams media frenzy to me, though, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it just screams 24-hour news cycle. We have to fill the airwaves. We need something to talk about.
Yes.
You know? It doesn't really, at the end of the day, change too much, you know?
Right. It does not change the circumstances of the case that we're talking about. It doesn't change the outcome of the trial, since this was post-trial and all of that good stuff, right?
And it's important to talk about because
it
sets the stage and the tone of how people were thinking about the case while it was happening.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it just, I don't know.
I feel the same way.
Yeah.
Here is the thing, though. This is what I will say. I agree with you in the sense of, if this is true, this is a disgusting use of a power dynamic between a client and their lawyer, obviously.
Yeah.
It is also no surprise and no mystery to us, since we discussed this in part one, that at the time, everybody thought that Casey was fucking hot. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And I'm pretty sure that Jose Baez was also a fucking gorilla, as he is, and thought the same things that all of the other gorillas were thinking at this time, right?
Yeah.
As disgusting as it is, since she fucking definitely murdered her daughter. But if this is true, I also find this to be particularly disgusting because, who the fuck are you to get up in front of all these people and talk about this horrible sexual assault that happened between her fucking dad and her, and then for you to be fucking, you know, being like, oh yeah, I canceled this interview, give me a fucking blowjob. Like, go fucking die, you sack of shit.
And
I fucking
not
hate
only
this
like
guy
presenting this story to the jury and all of that, but like doing voices and like damn near sound effects and shit.
Yeah, dude. Are you Hugh Jackman in The Greatest Showman, dude? Like,
literally.
Who are you? Who are you? A fucking clown? Oh my God. That's all that I really wanted to say. And again, I mentioned this because if it is true, it changes the dynamic between them, which is important for the story that we're telling on the Back Asswards podcast.
Yes.
Fucking piece of shit. Okay. And that, folks, leads us to what we are going to be talking about for the remainder of this episode in particular. The car. The white Pontiac Sunfire that Casey was driving. We had mentioned in the last episode and several times throughout this episode that Casey had gotten her parents' car impounded. Due to the car,
I totally would drive a Pontiac Sunfire.
She totally,
that is like
would,
the exact car that Casey Anthony would be driving.
Absolutely.
That's kind of nuts.
From Orange County to Hillsborough County. Yeah, that's an Orange County to Hillsborough County kind of car. You know
it
what I mean?
Really is.
That's a car that's meant to drive from Orlando to Tampa. Oh, shit.
Oh, my God.
Car got impounded. They got notified because it's under their name. Blah, blah, blah. What's important, again, to note here is that when they went to go pick up the Pontiac Sunfire, both Cindy and George were almost immediately distressed by the condition of the car, particularly the smell that was coming from the car. George Anthony, who once again used to work in law enforcement, said that he smelled a pretty strong odor as he approached the trunk of the car. The fact that he said this while being a former police officer is incredibly shocking and disturbing to me.
Yeah.
During the trial, because we are still talking about the trial, he recalled this moment saying, quote,
"I was very concerned about the odor. I had smelled something like that some years prior, and I was concerned. That particular smell, whenever you smell it, is something you never forget. It's a very distinct odor."
And again, just to drive this point home, there's a lot of law enforcement officials that say something pretty much to the same effect as this when they talk about the smell of dead people. They're like, once you smell it and you know what it smells like, that's in your brain rent-free, and you would know it if you smelled it again. Okay? When he and his wife, Cindy, opened the trunk, he was relieved to find, at the time, one single trash bag in there. And at the time, he said that there was nothing that showed any indication that Kaylee had been in the trunk of the car. This first time that they opened the trunk of the Pontiac Sunfire was at the impound lot, okay?
Okay.
They were somewhat relieved at this and began to drive the car home. George said, however, that the odor of the decomposition was so strong that they drove the car all the way home with the windows down due to that smell.
See, now that's a red flag.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say. He testified that he parked the car in their garage and opened all the windows again, left all the windows open. He inspected the trunk of the vehicle again, noticing a stain on the spare tire cover that he had never spotted before. So the trunk of this car had a basically like a mat that you would lift open and there's your spare tire, right?
Right.
To make it simple. That's where the stain was on that mat that you would lift up to reveal the spare tire. The supervisor of the tow truck company that removed Casey Anthony's abandoned car while her daughter Kaylee was missing also testified in the same trial proceeding that the car smelled like there had been a fucking dead body inside of it. Simon Birch, another character, who was the operations manager for Johnson's Wrecker Service during the summer of 2008, the actual tow company, said that Anthony's white Pontiac Sunfire had been on the tow yard's lot for 3 days when he examined the car's exterior in early July. Birch said, quote,
"I put my hand up to the glass to shield the sun and look through the windows. At that point, I did notice a fairly strong odor emitting from the vehicle. The instant flash in my mind was, whoa, I know what that smells like."
And again, not to get too morbid, we're in Florida, it's humid, it's hot, you can fucking smell it. Okay? Now I bet you're probably wondering, what did Casey and Jose have to say about this moment? Why was the car even impounded in the first place? I bet you're wondering.
Arden, I'm sitting here and I'm wondering, what did Casey and Jose have to say about this? Like, why was the car even impounded in the first place?
This is such an excellent question. I can't believe that you asked it at exactly the right time, Kyle. I'm so proud of you. According to testimony, Casey Anthony asked her boyfriend at the time, Tony Lazzaro, to pick her up from the parking lot on June 27th, saying that the car had run out of gas. It's as simple as that, Kyle.
Right, of course.
And she left it there for 4 days with no gas.
You know, of course.
Of course. Why not?
As you do.
Amen. Yeah. I mean, come on. You have a job at Universal Studios. I get it. You're busy. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Gas
is hard to come by sometimes, you know?
Yep. Mm-hmm. God. She had also, during this time period, told a friend that she believed that an animal carcass was lodged in her car's frame. That's so interesting that you would just mention that offhand. So interesting.
Also so interesting that you wouldn't, I don't know, investigate that a little bit farther.
Yeah, and like, I don't know, fucking work on getting the dead animal carcass out of your fucking frame, which there was no animal carcass in the frame when it was towed. No trace of it. No fucking nothing. Like, I don't know what to say to you, Casey. I don't get it. Arpad Vass, who is another character in this section of the trial, is an American forensic anthropologist who investigated the car that Casey was driving, and he testified during this trial in 2011. Arpad testified in front of the jury, saying that the presence of a decomposing human body is the only plausible explanation for the odor that came out of Casey Anthony's trunk. The only explanation. The testing that was conducted by Arpad Vass's team was conducted on carpet samples from the trunk of the Pontiac Sunfire, along with the spare tire cover, scrapings from the wheel well, air samples, and paper towels that were found in that fucking trash bag that was in the trunk. Vass, who spent most of the day that he was in court on the stand, said that he and his partners have, as part of their general research, identified some 30 compounds of significant degree in the human decomposition process.
Okay.
Seven of those were present in Casey Anthony's trunk.
Bro. I mean. Come on.
Of those, Vass testified under cross-examination by defense attorney Jose Baez that only five were to be considered because the other two of the seven were at trace levels. And Vass responded to this saying, quote,
"We were very, very conservative."
Which, here's the thing, folks. I don't know how much that means to you, the listener at home, or to you, Kyle. But they found seven, and that's them being like, and we're really trying not to find all seven of these.
Right.
We were very, very conservative. That's how I interpret this quote from Arpad Vass.
I think that's a fair interpretation.
Vass also said that as a control sample, scientists were able to find a blanket that the three-year-old's body was wrapped in and put into a car trunk for 3 months. He said, quote,
"The point of that was to confirm the point of that was to confirm that the compounds, such as we saw in the Florida trunk, that were consistent with human decomposition could be formed in that type of environment."
And in that test, four of the five compounds were present, he said. The only one that was not found in this control experiment that they did was chloroform, which was found in the trunk of Casey Anthony motherfucking car.
Chloroform. That's some old school shit.
And we all know what that is fucking used for, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about how devastating it is to find chloroform in the trunk of where this alleged 2.5-year-old dead body was. Okay? During cross-examination, Jose Baez tried to suggest that Vass had a financial interest in the case, which he was doing the entire trial, by the way. He was like, oh, well, Roy Kronk had a financial tie to this case, and this person had a financial tie to this case, and everybody thought they were going to make money off of Casey Anthony, which Take that for what you will, but that's what he said about Vass in this moment. But Vass, of course, denied this. But Jose also tried to cast doubt on his testing methods, his protocols and quality control and stuff like that.
Right.
He furthermore tried to get Vass to say that the fatty acids that were found on the paper towels from that trash bag could have been from meat. But Vass said that it would have to be raw meat that contacted that paper towel with a high fat percentage, and it would additionally have to be raw meat that has bacteria normally found in human bodies. That's the only way that that's possible.
Seems like we're making some pretty big leaps here.
Jose is, yes.
To say that that's not just trash.
Yeah.
Or to say it is just trash, excuse me.
Yeah, exactly. Vass also told Jose Baez that he was aware that the media had been reporting his findings before they were finalized, and that Vass was unhappy about that. He didn't appreciate the media doing that either. And Baez also did get Vass to acknowledge that at the time of the trial, he was not currently a member of any professional organizations. Okay? On that Monday morning, in court, Vass gave jurors in the trial a crash course on the stages of human decomposition and explained his nearly 20 years of study, some of which was done at the Body Farm, which is the anthropological research facility located near the University of Tennessee campus.
That's pretty crazy.
Okay. It is pretty crazy. Mm-hmm. Vass said that he was contacted by Orange County Sheriff's Detective Yuri Melich, who we mentioned in last week's episode, and asked to examine the evidence in the Casey Anthony case. So Melich approached Vass and asked him, will you look at this for us? Okay. He then requested air samples from various points in Casey Anthony's car at that point. Later in this trial, still sticking to the car, FBI trace evidence examiner Karen Lowe testified that there was a strand of hair found in the trunk as well. This strand of hair was similar to that of Kaylee's and additionally showed evidence of decomposition, this hair strand. But to be fair, Karen Lowe did say that hair analysis is not as precise as DNA analysis, so she could not say with absolute certainty that the hair belonged to Kaylee Anthony. She said she could not say how the hair got there.
Right.
Now, this strand of hair did show signs of decomposition at the root of the hair, where the follicle is, which, if you take that line of thinking and you assume that it's Kaylee's and it is decomposing, that means that that hair was once attached to the decomposing skull of Kaylee Anthony, which is why the hair would show traces of decomposition.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm with you.
Yep, I just mentioned that. Karen Lowe also testified under questioning from Jose Baez that while the hair is clearly not Casey Anthony's, it could belong to any other light-haired relative on her mother's side of the family. The kind of DNA testing authorities were able to perform on the sample reveals that DNA passed down only through maternal lines. So it would have had to have been either Cindy or Kaylee, pretty much.
Interesting.
Uh-huh. Who else had a decomposing body at the time, Kyle? My God.
Not me.
Yeah. And although this may seem like completely damning evidence that I just presented to you. This aspect of the trial, the car, is truly only scratching the surface of what we're talking about. And with that, my friends, after however many hours this fucking episode ends up being, that is where we're going to pick up next week in part three on our series of the death of Kaylee Anthony and the somewhat case study of her mother, Casey Anthony.
Recording for like 3 hours. Holy shit.
We did go back and record a re-recorded section. That's true.
Holy shit, Arden. I need to go talk to my doctor because my blood pressure is through the roof right now. Yeah, I am stressed. I am mad. I am frustrated.
Yeah.
And, you know, to speak to that last paragraph there, does seem like some pretty damning evidence.
Oh, yeah, I would
that
say
you presented
so.
There, I would yeah. say. If I was, I don't know, on a hypothetical jury on a hypothetical trial, allegedly. Speaking.
Yeah.
we're going to save our final thoughts for our back ass word stance, as we always do. Which is maybe next week.
Maybe next week. It might be a fourth part. I'm sorry, folks.
listen, anytime we start a series and tell you how many parts it's going to be, add at least one onto the total count.
And that one comes from the grain of salt that we're always giving you, you know?
Yeah. But safe to say, amazing research, Arden.
Thanks.
This case is only getting more interesting, and we've still got quite a ways to go. So
we do.
I'm very excited for next week, to be sure.
Next week is going to be a doozy. I'll tell you that right now. And for those of you who don't know, if you've made it this far in the episode, hello, nice to see you. For those of you who don't know, there has been a new documentary that was released semi-recently on Peacock, which is entitled Casey Anthony, Where the Truth Lies. Very clever name. And I started watching that the other day, and oh boy, we got some shit to talk about there, my friends.
Oh yeah?
We live post that documentary coming out, and oh fuck yeah, Kyle. There is, dude. That documentary, I started it the other day and I was like, oh my actual God, this is, it's making me feel a lot of things. Let me just say. It actually might be useful for you to watch that documentary before
I might.
Maybe
What's
part
it on?
3 and 4. It's on Peacock.
Okay.
Peacock. It's crazy.
I need to check it out.
We're definitely going to talk about it in this series, folks. So buckle in for that.
Oh yeah. Well, thank you so much for listening to the podcast, everybody.
Thank you so much. I'm sorry to do this to you all. I'm doing it to myself as well. I'm filtering it to you. But for real, thank you for being here. It means so much to be able to create content like this and talk about it the way that we want to talk about it and tell the story that deserves to be told.
Yeah. You can subscribe and review if you're enjoying the show. And if you think someone else will enjoy the show, please share it with them.
Because word of mouth is the best way to spread that the Backassards podcast will never tell you an accurate episode list for any of the series that they're about to do. And you know that the Backassards podcast is always extending their series and that they're your favorite podcast.
You can listen to our previous episodes for more. I would recommend our episode on the Pascagoula abduction.
Ooh, a spicy one from our alien month of all places.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, Pascagoula is a crazy, crazy case. There's radiation in there. There's equilateral triangles all over the place. I don't even know where to begin with that one. It's a fun episode. Go listen to it. And Alec was there, too. It was awesome.
Yeah. You can follow me and Arden on Twitter. I am at @BackAssWordKyle. Arden is at @Arden_Smith. And you can follow the podcast on all of your favorite social medias, on X at BackAssWordsPod, Instagram, BackAssWordsPod, TikTok, BackAssPod, and on Facebook, search the BackAssWords Podcast. You can also find us over on Patreon now.
Yay!
We have an amazing bonus show that we do once a week over there, the Wednesday Phenomena.
Wednesday Phenomenon!
And you can unlock access to that if you support us at the $5 a month tier. You also get access to our Discord server, and if you just want access to the Discord server and to support us a little bit and get a shout out on the main show, you can join us at the $1 tier. It's a lot of fun over there.
It is so much fun, folks. You should really join us over there. We're doing so much cool stuff on the Wednesday Phenomenon. For real. It's so much fun.
Well, I am Kyle.
I'm Arden.
And we will see you next week. Again, I don't really have a bit for it this week.
No.
Just stay safe. Stay weird.
The danger is real.
We appreciate you. The danger is real. We'll see you next week.